Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Hello, good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network Podcast. And I always say the first because, you know, there's two. There is Paganos del Mundo that airs every Saturday and it's in Spanish and Portuguese. Tonight, I have a guest with whom I'm going to be besties. I can just feel it that we're going to be besties. Her name is Sasha Graham. She is the best-selling author of over 10 books and tarot kits, including 365 Tarot Spreads, Llewellyn's Complete Book of the Rider White Smith Tarot, and Darkwood Tarot. She teaches tarot classes and produces tarot events at New York City's premier cultural institutions, including the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Sasha has appeared on film, television, radio, and the New York Times, and you can visit her and learn everything and anything about her at www.sashagraham.com. And I am thrilled that she's here tonight. For those that can't see, yes, this is pre-recorded. We have audio and video. Wah, wah. We're going to be talking about her book, The Magic of Tarot. Welcome, Sasha. How are you?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm so very happy that you said yes. I'm so very happy for Llewellyn to suggest that I come and get to know you. And as I was telling you before we started taping, I am the one person that not know about all your decks and all your words. So I want to learn everything and anything that you have to offer. I love the book. I love the book. But I keep teasing y'all. We're going to talk about the book in a minute. I always ask all of my guests, how did you get into the life of magic and, you know, this kind of so-called alternative spirituality? When did you know you were a witch?
I'm a Halloween baby. So I felt like a witch since I can remember. And I had a grandmother who called me the Good Witch of the East. She would always send me cards from the West, from the Good Witch of the West to the Good Witch of the East. So yeah, being born on Halloween, I just always felt like, honestly, I felt like I was marked. I felt like there was something very special. I felt innately connected to the holiday. I felt like all the candy in the world was for me. And I felt like reading tarot was my birthright, which was why I was kind of shocked when I bought my first tarot deck at about 12 years old. And I opened it up and I realized I had no idea how to read them.
Wow. I love to hear you saying that you started at 12 years old, because there is such a stigma sometimes, you know, for people that say, when people are too young, they shouldn't be learning magic. They shouldn't be touching like magical tools and sacred tools. And I know by reading your book that for you, tarot is a sacred tool, the sacred tool. But what's your opinion on young people when people start young and they start like reading and getting into the tarot and all that?
Well, I think that children are innately magical and innately spiritual and I think are full of sacred space and sacred objects. Just think about any child or your own favorite toy when you were little, or your favorite like teddy bear. That is a sacred bond. So I don't think there's ever an age that theoretically would be too young. And in fact, I think a lot of magical work and a lot of psychoanalytical work that we do as adults is getting back in touch with that magical part of us when we were young, when we didn't have preconceived notions, and when we really could see more of the invisible world. So I'm a huge fan of if a child is into it, I think it is fascinated and beguiled, that should be encouraged.
And being a Halloween baby, did you ever feel like you didn't have a party because everybody was out doing Halloween? Or did you feel like the whole party was because of you?
I felt like the whole, I didn't feel like it was because of me, but I felt I was connected to it. Like I was part of the revelry, and I always loved dressing up anyway. I was like, I loved kind of liminal worlds as a very young child. Like the first time I walked into a theater and saw a play being performed, I was like, oh, what is this? It looked like a dream to me. So yeah, I thought the whole thing was just kind of part and parcel. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are you originally from New York City, or were you born elsewhere?
No, I was born in the Adirondacks in upstate New York, but I had this crazy hippie mother who literally brought me around the country. I lived in 27 different homes before I moved here, actually to this building in 1988 in Manhattan. So I've been on the same block in New York City in three different apartments, but this was my first building. So I think that sense of, I think living in so many different states and in so many different homes, and often in very rural, rustic places, we were often on farms and in the mountains or in canyons. I began to, from a very young age, understand kind of the energy of places and the differentiation between, like, I guess you would call it a genius loci. And again, it gave me that kind of sense of being in between worlds, mm-hmm. not belonging from any, not necessarily, because it's interesting not to really be from any one place. And I don't have a very large family. So I think that kind of aided in my spiritual development.
Mm-hmm. And so, so many questions. I have to choose wisely, because New York, you know, and all the magic of the place. But tarot, we're going to bring it back to tarot. We're going to talk about paranormal, but I want to bring it back to tarot. So at 12, you grab your first deck of cards and you're like, what's this, right? So when the actual journey of learning begins?
So I was super excited. I opened the deck. I took them out. I was like, oh my God, I don't know what these mean. And I had got them for a school fair. It was a fundraising fair. Okay. And so I thought I'd do like a gypsy fortune telling tent and read the tarot. So I got really upset when I opened the cards and didn't know what they were. But my stepsister had a born again Christian best friend who was in the house. She came downstairs, saw the tarot deck, grabbed it, ran outside, threw them into a trash can and lit them on fire with lighter fluid and told me they were the devil's work.
What? Did you slap her?
No, she was so scared. Like she was so scared. You know, I mean, people who work with tarot may have seen this reaction. Some people really think that tarot is evil. So when they see it, they're like, ah, like they get really scared. So she actually kind of freaked me out and frightened me at first, but then I thought, wow, these must be really powerful for her to have like reacted like this. So I still thought they were cool. My deep learning of tarot, however, probably occurred in my teens and 20s. And let's be honest, I wasn't using them as a deep spiritual tool. I was looking at boys and I wanted to read for my friends and about their boyfriends and like what was going on. And so it wasn't until later on in my 30s when I became a professional tarot reader and I decided to go to tarot school, because there's a tarot school here in New York City, that slowly and surely it became my spiritual practice. And now it's really the lens with which I understand kind of my entire experience.
Mm-hmm. I love, because I teach as well, you know, and I tell my apprentices, eventually you start seeing people walking by and you're like, oh, there goes the Ten of Cups, or there goes the Hierophant, or, oh, she's like the moon, you know. What do you think about people? And of course, everybody has a right of believing or not on tarot, mm-hmm. right? But when people look at the cards and they say like, oh, this is nothing, it's just a game, there has no spiritual value. What is your take on that? What do you think about that?
Well, there's I'm not here to, I've never been one to try and convince anyone of anything. You know what I mean? I think if something's not for a person, then it's not for them. There's plenty of people who are into it. You know, I think that there's so much weight and so much history. And so there's been so much prosecution of the cards, like historically, not only the cards, but women and wise, powerful women, right? So I'm not surprised by it. It disappoints me, but my favorite thing in the world, honestly, is are people who come to me and maybe don't know what it is and they're kind of curious. And then they walk away like, wow.
Right.
That was amazing. That really makes me happy.
I love that. I love that as well. And yeah, I second that. That is one of the coolest experiences because, you know, they will come like, oh yeah, this is nothing. This is nothing. And then you do the reading. And then after the reading, they're like, oh my God, when can I book another reading?
Exactly. And that happens a lot, right? Like when I used to hire myself out for private parties. So a lot of just random people who never would have otherwise come across tarot would come by my table and we'd wind up having so much fun. So
yep. It was cool. That's beautiful. I was going to ask you something else and I forgot. Anyway. I remember. So the second big divide on tarot, right? Like, oh, you have to be a psychic or no, you can't be anybody. I explain to people when given the space, you know, like everybody can sing. If you have vocal cords, everybody can talk. Some people have a natural talent, such as Beyonce or Adele, right? But I would like to hear your opinion.
So everyone's psychic. Everyone's intuitive. Everyone has a third eye. I really don't like it. It makes me sad when people talk about these things as if there are powers or talents or abilities that belong to someone else. And someone else is the expert when they're your birthright. It's your birthright. And of course, like, we're not all gonna read cards like Beyonce sings, that's ridiculous, but we all have a voice. Even if we're mute, you know, we can express ourselves in some way. And so tarot is an extraordinary tool, not only to figure out kind of what your psychic and intuitive superpowers are, because when you start using the cards, you start to, and you start to keep track and keep a journal, suddenly you understand, like you start to understand how you work. But you also understand your kind of soul's experience in the world. And that's a really exciting thing, because the great thing about tarot and the supernatural and spiritual magical stuff is that the further you go, the richer it gets. And so what it ultimately does, any kind of spiritual magical practice, brings so much pleasure to life, you know? And I think that, I just think it's such an exciting adventure. And it's something that teachers can guide you on, but ultimately you have to do the work yourself, because your experience of this world is as unique as your kiss. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're talking about the invisible world. We're talking about the ephemeral. These are not things that are easily put into words. It's why art and music and literature and poetry is better often at expressing the things that we encounter in the invisible world than just discussing it. But it's so divine and it's so delicious, and you start to understand why you're here. And so, yeah. And tarot is the perfect tool for that. It's just the perfect portable tool for all of that stuff, which is why I'm such a fan.
Yeah, it's this life. I always tell people, you know, we can lie to each other. We can lie to ourselves. The cards don't lie. The cards never lie. They have no reason to lie. And I love that it's about interpretation. Look, I want to keep talking about tarot. Obviously, this show is going to be all about this book, The Magic of Tarot. But I cannot not ask you, living in New York, living in Manhattan, the ghost stories, because that's the oldest city in the city of the United States. And you do this soul paranormal ghost presentations and stuff like that. Tell us a little bit about that. Why'd you do, how you do it, and how do you get into it?
Yeah. So I host a monthly event called Ghost Stories by the Fire. And it's actually literally it's at a distillery out in Brooklyn, and they have a fire pit in the courtyard. And I already have so many psychic and interesting like medium friends and writers and artists. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to do an evening of ghost storytelling, but also bring on as featured storytellers, psychics, and mediums? Because you and I, or anybody listening to this show who does tarot reading or psychic work for a living, we really live in the paranormal. That's really kind of like our playground. And for most quote unquote regular people, that's just not the case. So I thought, wouldn't it be interesting? The whole point of the ghost story night is to have people share their paranormal experiences, their near death, their creepy stories. And I thought it would be really, really cool to begin and end the evening with my psychic friends telling ghost stories, talking about things that have happened to them because they're so comfortable in this world. And I think we've done 6 or 7 storytelling evenings thus far, and the stories are phenomenal. And people get up, and people from the audience don't even think they're going to share anything, and they wind up getting up and sharing stories. And you hear about people who almost died and stories of loved ones who've passed over and came back with messages. It winds up being a really life-affirming night as well as being very creepy. And of course, because we're all in New York City, we get so many great spooky, you know, haunted loft stories. Just being in the city, death kind of surrounds you all the time. Like I just recently saw like a cadaver get tossed into a city morgue. I was just having drinks around the corner, and the next thing I look over and there's a dead body. Like that's so New York, right? Yeah, there's so much energy here. And there's a lot of, like, it's a fun place to do magic in. I'm five blocks from J-Lo's New York City apartment. So I do like J-Lo magic when I walk by, because you can see her balcony. It's a low building. I mean, she's rarely there because this isn't her home base, but you know, it's a magical, haunted, fabulous place.
Wow. Yep. Definitely have to go to New York.
Yeah.
Put it on the to-do list.
And you have to tell a story. You have to.
Oh my God. I have so many. I have so many because, you know, I'm originally from Mexico City, and this very same sentiment. I mean, over 500-year-old city, and there's so much death and there's so much activity happening. And I think that's why I love Chicago so much, because the lake effect. A lot of people don't know that Mexico City was built on top of a lake. And so you have that element of the energy of water. And for a long, long time, I was asking myself, why is Chicago so similar to Mexico City, besides having that many Mexicans in it? And I asked one of my friends who is a psychic, and she told me it's the lake. And she didn't know about Mexico being on a lake. And then she asked me, is Mexico City close to a lake? And I'm like, Mexico City was built on a lake.
That's wild.
So, yeah, there's a lot of energy. And there's, I mean, but enough about that. I really want to get into today being Valentine's Day and all about love. And I'm so thrilled to be sharing Valentine's Day with you, because I promise you we're going to be besties. if you take me.
I take you.
Do you want to be my friend?
I want to be your Valentine. Let's be Valentine.
Let's be Valentine's. Here we are being each other's Valentine. I should be wearing red, but you know, this wasn't planned. Anyway. We hear quite often, we the professional tarot readers, it's like we cannot escape it. Can you read about my twin flame? Okay, let's roll our eyes together. 1, 2, 3. What's your opinion?
On twin flames, I truly believe there are certain kind of catchwords and phrases that come up. Manifest is a big one right now with the kids. Manifest, am I manifesting? I'm gonna manifest, I'm manifesting today. There's nothing innately wrong with manifesting, and there's nothing innately wrong with wanting to have a twin flame. But I think there's an inherent danger in the catchphrase, in particular twin flame, because when, and I'm not excluded in this, anybody, right? When they're kind of in love and grinding over a relationship that may not be working out, the twin flame theory offers this wonderful kind of way for you to go deeper with why it's a person who you're connected to, but it's not working out. And it just, to me, it seems like a big bag of bullshit and just a way to kind of ruminate and talk about, like, and we all know as tarot readers that there are people who come and all they want to do is talk about their romance, and they will sit with you for 3 hours and just talk about whoever they're obsessing about. And I get it. That's human. There's nothing, you know, innately wrong with that. But I don't think that twin flame theories do us any favors when the world is made of infinite love. When there is so much around you. And I think that, of course, we've all been obsessed. We're all full of desire. We all want love, but it's our heads that mess us up, right? It's our endorphins that mess us up and cause us so much misery when things don't work out the way that we want them to. Are we connected to certain people? And were we probably pre-connected to them? And will we be connected to them again after this experience? Yeah, probably. But I think I just don't think that twin flame theories are helpful at all.
You know, my opinion is always like, okay, if you were connected to this person and it's meant to work, it's going to work. If you were connected to this person and it's not working, there's a reason why it's not working. And I think sometimes twin flame is the crutch that we use to continue in relationships that otherwise are not beneficial, you know? Yeah. And that people throw, and again, we're going to be besties, because one of my biggest pet peeves is when people throw certain terms or phrases that are really important, that they're heavy, that as tarot readers, we ought to learn, right? And that people just throw that out like, manifesting or twin flame or shadow work or the healing the inner child, like they have become marketable pivots. So yeah, people use those words to sell whatever. And like everything, when capitalism put its hands on it, it's ruined. And that twin flame thing is one of them, in my opinion. I was telling you about amarres, people. So this is very traditional, that happens in the Latin American, Spanish speaking culture. I'm from Mexico, so I'm going to speak about how I see it in Mexico. And what an amarre is people are convinced that Johnny on the corner is their twin flame. So they do a magic spell. Amarre means to tie. So literally is to tie up the person to your love, so they will be willing to receive your love and then give it back. And I'm like, but that is fake.
And not only not love
is fake, is not love. And then I do believe in a threefold law, and you mentioned that in the book, so I know you believe in it as well. And I'm like, what you throw away, what you throw out comes back to you. So if somebody is being tied up by you, you're setting yourself to be tied up to somebody else or to the same person. And it doesn't work because then they will leave. And then you're the one that cannot leave. It's so dangerous.
It's so dangerous. One of the most important things about magic, and it's something, you know, I think that there is a reason that certain types of magic should not be learned or cast. When you were talking earlier about children and giving children magical tools, I think that there's certain magic that shouldn't be used until you're over 40 or until you're over 50. And probably when I'm 80, I'll discover, you know, 80-year-old magic that is there for a good reason. First of all, we don't always know what's best for us. And I always say this in a magic class or talking to people who are curious about spell work, like, what if everything you ever wanted came true? You'd be married to that douchebag from high school.
Oh my God, no.
Right? So first of all, the idea that we know what we want, But the interesting thing, I think, about working in tandem with the universe or divine energy is that you have to understand that you always have what you need right in front of you. It may not be what you want, but it's what you need, and the tools are there. So if you cast a spell, a freeze spell, right? Not a binding. Binding spells terrify me. I always say the true magician, the true witch is not out there casting spells on other people or on the world. You work the magic on yourself. You know, it all does come back to you three times. It does. It does. What you put out comes back to you. So if your spell doesn't work, and if the person that you're in love with doesn't love you back, you have to trust that there's a very good reason for it and move on.
Yeah. And sometimes the spell works and the answer from the divine is no.
Yeah.
And that's the answer is no. It's no because it's not for you. It's not for your greatest good. It's not for your benefit. And yeah, you're manifesting an answer. The answer is no.
The answer is forward. No. You and know. The sooner you know that, the quicker you can kind of move on. Not to say it's easy. I understand that it's not easy. And I understand, like, as tarot readers, we know 90% of the time our readings are about love. And it doesn't matter how wealthy or how poor or how beautiful or how not beautiful. Like, everybody wants love. Everybody wants security. Everybody wants stability. And it's the great gift of being a tarot reader. It's like you become an inadvertent sociologist and recognize how similar we all are.
Oh, yeah.
But with that, you know, you have to be willing, I think, to be a strong magical creature to say, okay, maybe now is not the time. But if it's happened once, it'll happen again. And that is true.
Yeah. And I think that, as you said, you know, we see the need of people for love and that unquenchable thirst that comes when you love yourself. And it's so easy to say, you know, love yourself. Oh, yeah, I love myself. Look, there's more work that can. It's like the peeling an onion, right? There's always more layers. Speaking of it, I'm getting itchy to talk about the book. So the book is, ta-da. Oh, the graphic, the art is so beautiful. The magic,
so
yeah, the magic of tarot, your guide to intuitive readings, rituals, and spells by Sasha Graham. Tell us about this. I love this book. It's so complete. It's so complete. I have to tell you, as a professor teaching tarot, as a tutor rather, I love this as a companion for teaching. It is a very good tool for teaching people how to read. I don't know if you were intended to write it that way, but it is beautiful. It is very down to earth. It's very, very easy digestible, especially for people that have never, ever, ever grab a deck of tarot cards. So tell us what inspired you to write this wonderful book.
Thank you for saying that. A lot of the material in the book came from, I've spent the last, I would say, pre-pandemic. I had spent probably 3 years really traveling around the entire world teaching tarot. So everywhere from the Middle East to China to, you know, yoga retreat places like in the Berkshires, just everywhere giving master classes. So a lot of the material in the book is a collation, is collated what I was teaching. And I learned so much doing so much teaching about what beginning students need. And I think it's so important that students arrive at their own answers. So as you probably noticed, there's lots of journal prompts where I lead you or I lead the reader into figuring out what they think a card means. There's lots of experiential stuff, lots of like meditations. And so really I wrote this book to be a companion to the classes that I teach. I wrote it also to go along with my tarot deck, the Darkwood Tarot. So you mentioned the title or the cover art. That is a painting by Abigail Larson, who illustrated my Darkwood Tarot deck. And so I wanted the two to go hand in hand because there was so much more that I wanted to put into the Darkwood Tarot that I couldn't fit into the companion book. And I just really want, I want tarot for students to be as pleasureful, delightful, and enjoyable as it can possibly be, so that they go further and go deeper and richer. And so that's really what the book was about.
It is a wonderful book, and I love that you touch in a lot of things that, in my opinion, as a colleague, teacher, they're basic for tarot. They need to be learned, such as colors and numbers and listening to the stories of the cards and breaking the tarot on different levels and etc. So I don't want to give too much of the book. Obviously, you need to buy it. It's a great book, whether you are a neophyte or whether you are a professional or advanced. This is a great tool to have. And I love that you talk about archetypes and describe those. Mm-hmm. I love that you talk about the hero's journey and describe that. But my number one, where I went like, is when you were talking about shadow work. Yes. Shadow work is as basic as air, as basic as sleep, as basic as drinking water. I'm drinking water now, people. I'm famous for not drinking water, but I'm drinking water now. So shadow work, why is it so vital?
Okay, I find shadow work essential. Absolutely, positively, game-changingly essential. Because it's our job as magical beings, as humans, to evolve. And I don't think it's possible to evolve without doing shadow work. What is shadow work? Shadow work is about looking at the things in your life, the things about yourself that you don't want to look at. It's about cleaning up after yourself. And too often, and I'm guilty of this as well, when we're reading tarot cards, we're often just telling ourselves what we want to hear. Sometimes that's okay. Sometimes you need to be comforted. You know, you want that. But if we're really here to evolve, if we're really here to change the patterns, to move forward, to, like, I always define magic is your soul coming into your authentic, like, high priestess self, coming into alignment with the expanding energy of the universe. If you want to do that, you have to look at the icky stuff and the shitty things that you do, because we all do shitty things. You know, we just all do. It's human. And mm-hmm. That's not to say it's not justified, and it's not to say that there's not reasons for it, but recognizing it, bringing the light of your consciousness to the dark parts of things that you don't want to look at, is going to forever change that landscape. And additionally, really good things hide in the shadow as well. The shadow is not just dark, spooky, scary stuff. It's talents, it's desires, it's things. And when you start to explore that, you suddenly recognize that there's this toolbox of magic inside of you, and you can't do shadow work with really understanding the fact that there's this idea that, you know, this new age idea, and I don't mean to, like, kind of poo-poo it, but I do, of love and light. And everything that's light is great. Everything, you know, celestial is perfect, and what's deep down and dark and below is somehow demonic or dark. And that's just not the case, because darkness is what makes up 99.999% of the universe. Darkness is where all potential resides. Darkness, death, is the manifestation ground of what has not come to be yet. So we have to really, again, as magical beings, break out of this idea that love and light is somehow like a yin yang equal. It's not.
Pardon me, I interrupted you. And not to go into a rabbit hole, because then we will need like a 3-hour show, but how incredibly racist the concept of dark is bad, light is good. Which I'm not going to get into, because we don't have the time. We just don't have the time. But it's incredibly racist as well. You know, like, white is good, black is bad. Just think about it. And going back to one of my pet peeves, as we were talking about earlier, when people utilize these phrases to sell their products or sell their courses and classes. And I kid you not, hold on to your chair, because I don't want you to fall laughing. I had a person on the community who was selling a course on loving the shadow self and the dark aspects of the aspects of darkness. And their opening statement on their course was, because we are not afraid when the light is off. We are witches. We're never afraid of the night and the absence of light. He was talking about physical darkness. That's how you're selling the concept of shadow work. Come on. I often tell people, you know, if you want to work on your shadow, it's a forever work. And healing your inner child is not going to happen in a 3-hour course. And you don't have to buy yoga pants to do it.
Nope.
In 3 hours, you might understand the concept of the inner child, but you are not going to heal an inner child in 3 hours. There is no way. It's a life commitment. And I love that you mentioned that it's a life commitment and that there might be things that we discover at 40 and there might be things that we discover at 50. And if God is will, we will live to 80 and we will continue discovering more layers and layers and layers of our work. But anyway, as we were talking about being each other's Valentine today, I love that you also add magic and spells done with tarot. I'm going to let you talk about, because I don't want to give it away, because the book, but tell us what you can about this spell to attract the highest possibly romantic relationship.
So, again, going back to what we were talking about before, knowing as readers that so many people are looking for love or want to attract it. And I think I love having the opportunity to write how to do a spell, how to, even the way we phrase things, like words are the first magic, right? And so a spell to attract the highest possible romantic relationship is a beautiful thing because it's wide open. It's not a spell to attract a multi-million dollar venture capitalist, you know, even though that's what you hope might show up at your door. And the trick to magic is that often what you want is right in front of you, but do you have the eyes to see it? When things don't show up the way that we expect them to show up, often we're missing the magic that's right in front of us. I correlate that very much with the Tower card, which is releasing. Like once you cast a spell, you've got to release. And yep. When you want something desperately, you can want it all you want, but release how it's going to show up for you. Because if you do a spell and then release, it's unbelievable the way things will unfold. And it's almost like my greatest joy when actively working magic is watching at how things unfold, because it always happens. It always occurs in a way I never could have imagined. And oh, I have chills right now thinking about it, because that really puts you in a state of wonder. You know, magic is a two-way thing. It's you and the universe, or whatever you want to call that divinity or God or whatever. And you have to give divinity its chance to work its magic. And it wants to wow you. You know, it wants to knock your socks off. And if you give it a chance, I promise you it will, because it has happened so many times. And it is extraordinary. And it affirms all of the work that we're doing and that you do, you know? So I wrote that spell to encourage people to reach for what's good for them, and trusting that what is right for them will show up.
Yeah. And I love the cards that you chose for that. How you explain this card means that, this card, because for people that don't have the book yet, Sasha tells us, grab these cards, set them out this way. Each card has a meaning. And this is where you're going to visualize when you'll work in this spell. Mm-hmm. And as a tarot reader and a person that has been reading for 30 some years, yes, yes, that's exactly what those cards convey. And when you utilize them to do a spell work, It's, I mean, tarot is not limited to just doing readings, but you can absolutely do tarot spell casting work, and it's fantastic, and it works. And you have all the elements, and you have everything you need in there, and it's just a little pack of 78 cards.
Yes, exactly, exactly, exactly that. And then what's great is just like, you know, in candle magic, when you burn the candle, maybe for 7 days after, and you're constantly kind of reinforcing that desire, that goal, you know, tarot is so visual. It's so visual. So it's just such a, to me, it was always such a non-brainer for spell work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I know we all know the answer to this, but I have to ask you, of course, through Llewellyn, but for the people that need, you need this book, The Magic of Tarot. So I have to ask you, where can we buy the book? I got mine already. Don't hate me.
I'm so excited. You can get The Magic of Tarot anywhere, any bookstore. If the bookstore doesn't have it on its shelves, you can order it through the bookstore, brick and mortar, of course. I'm a huge fan of bookstores, so please order through your brick and mortar, you know, small business bookstores. But you can also order it online. You can find it through my website, sashagram.com, and pretty much everywhere that books are sold.
Beautiful. That is beautiful. And I want to thank you, and I give a big shout out to Llewellyn, obviously, for making this connection. Did they know that we're going to create a group of besties? I guess they didn't. But, you know, we have so many places where we intersect, and reading your words is reaffirming, both as a person who loves tarot, as a teacher, and also as a magic practitioner. And Sasha taps into so many things: colors, numbers, the telling of the story, how everybody can read, how to open your third eye, how to work your magic with your third eye, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you think you're not a psychic, you're wrong. You are. And she tells you here how to do the thing. So I love about the book that it's not just about telling your story, but how to prompt other people to tell their own story. And that is wonderful. So Sasha, thank you so much for having come to the show. Thank you for spending Valentine's Day with me. This is wonderful. And I will leave you the microphone so you can say goodbye to your audience.
Yeah, so thank you. If anybody wants to find out any more information, go to sashagram.com. I'm on Instagram, Sasha Tarot Diva. Really easy to find. You can just Google me. And I've got a slew of other books and tarot decks out there as well. So
wait, which other books do you have?
Oh, I wrote a book called Tarot Diva, which is about how to apply tarot to every single aspect of your life, from your fashion to your kitchen, to which court cards you might want to date, sleep with, romance, or be best friends with. I wrote a book called 365 Tarot Spreads, which is a tarot spread for every single day of the year. I wrote 365 Tarot Spells, which is a tarot spell for every single day of the year. I wrote the complete book of the Rider-Waite-Smith Tarot, which is a comprehensive guide into what Arthur Waite and Pamela Coleman Smith were doing when they created the Rider-Waite-Smith Tarot deck in 1909. I wrote a compendium of encyclopedias for Los Garabeo, which is Tarot Fundamentals, Tarot Compendium, and Tarot something else. Anyway, those are out there. I've just finished writing all of the guidebooks for Los Garabeo's Tarot of 1909 edition of the Rider-Waite cards. I have my first tarot deck was Tarot of the Haunted House with Los Garabeo. The Darkwood Tarot is my shadow work tarot deck, which is out now, which is a bestseller. People are really like loving that deck. I have a tarot deck coming out in the spring of 2023 called Tarot of the Witch's Garden.
What? Okay, let me pin you in for 2023.
Yes!
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think I hit all of them. And then I'm in annuals and stuff, but I love to write, so I've got lots of titles.
Wow, and you know what? This is not a secret. I have to change the narrative because, as Sasha has told us before, the way we express ourselves, that is what we manifest. And I used to say, until about 6 months ago, I'm really bad at reading. I learn by hearing, and that's why I do podcasts because I like to hear blah blah. That is changing. Thank you, Llewellyn. Thank you all of you writers that are out there because you are so amazing. So I'm changing that chip, right? I am getting better at reading, and something that helps you get better at reading is when a book is broken down in small chapters, and even the font helps, right? And I
Yes.
have to tell you, folks, this book is very easy to read. That doesn't mean the material in the book is not complex and rich. It is very rich. But the font, the layout, all the bullet points, the graphics are my best friends. I'm a tarot reader. Graphics are my best friends. When people put graphics on their books, they are a very, very good help for people like me who has a hard time connecting with a compendium of pages and pages of words and words and words. So when you have little graphics in there, it's very helpful and it's also beautiful.
Oh,
You know, but
there's also an audio version as well. So anybody who belongs to Audible or any of those, you can find there's an Audible. There's I'm not reading it, unfortunately. They brought in a voiceover talent to read the book, but there is an audio version as well.
and for those who are not watching the video, my jaw just dropped to the floor because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get. So this is what I do. I will put on the audio and then I will read along with the person who's writing. I think it has a little bit to do with me being ESL, but also, as you know, I mean, again, I'm changing the narrative. I'm getting better, but yeah, this is a easy to read book, and I'm saying this with love and admiration because the way it was laid out and broken down, the chapters, the way each chapter has like a sub little chapter inside of it, so it's really easy to follow along.
Thank you.
And I appreciate that as a person who used to have issues reading, you know, it's a really good. I said I was gonna let you go, and I cannot let you go because I don't wanna. Anyway. Oh, Llewellyn, what have you done? You put us together now, and okay, well, bestie, adventures to come. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to everyone who listened, whether you listen now or you listen later. Happy Valentine's Day. And please don't forget to tune in and listen to Selena Fox on Sundays and Wednesdays. She's doing nature mystic and nature spirituality. Deborah Rose, two Tuesdays a month, doing Circle Talk. Janet and David Ewing, two Thursdays a month, doing Moon Magic. The once monthly Blue Marble with Char Bear. And of course, Paganos del Mundo in Spanish and Portuguese with Cristina Ortiz, Carolina Amor, Mónica Gobín, Harwood Tuileva, Patricia Finclair, and yours truly, Laura Gonzalez. And of course, Lunatic Mondays, every Monday of the month. The first Monday is in Spanish. The third Monday, we have the Social Justice Series with my dear friend and colleague, Reverend Jake Bradley. So there's over 700 hours of podcasts on CSMP. So please jump in. We are on iTunes, TuneIn, Spotify, Stitcher, iBooks, and everywhere that you get your podcasts. So until we see each other again, never forget that you are loved. Bye-bye.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.